Tonight's show, we're going to be discussing a topic a little off the beaten path. I realize we should probably be talking about the halakha of the 9 days, but it's nice sometimes to take a break from the avelos and talk about something a little different. So tonight's share, we're going to be discussing the halakhic status of reading other people's letters, mails, emails, phone tapping, maybe even talk about putting in a nanny cam and things like that, about what's the right of someone's private information, reading someone else's private things. What exactly is that halachic status of all these things? So if you speak to most people and you ask them about reading other people's mail, the first thing they'll tell you is Chayim of Rabbeinu Gershom. They might be right, they might be wrong, but there is something called Chayim of Rabbeinu Gershom. Now, in order to understand Chayim of Rabbeinu Gershom, we have to have a little bit of a history background of who Rabbeinu Gershom was. Rabbeinu Gershom was known as Rabbeinu Gershom ben Yehuda Meir HaGoyla. When we talk about Rabbeinu Gershom, we talk about him as the light of the Goyla, of the during the Golos. Rabbeinu Gershom was one of the greatest Rishonim, early Rishonim. He lived in the turn of the century. He was born in 1960, in 960, and died in 1040. Early Rishonim. Rashi was the third generation Talmud of Rabbeinu Gershom, meaning Rabbeinu Gershom had a Talmud. His Talmud was the Rebbe of Rashi. That's some of the greatness of Rabbeinu Gershom. Now, Rabbeinu Gershom was an Ashkenazic Rishon. He lived in Germany, Mainz, Germany. And he was one of the earliest yeshivas of Ashkenazic Jewry that we know of in our history. One of the sad things about Rabbeinu Gershom's history is he had a son who went off the derech and became a Christian. And he said shiva twice for his son. Once when his son died, and once when his son went off the derech, so to say. And as we'll see, one of his takanas that he made had to do with people that went off the derech, that you have to be open-minded to them, that it wasn't easy at that time in history, because this was right before the Crusades. The Crusades took place in 1096. So this time in history, the Christian neighbors weren't exactly very friendly to the Jewish counterparts. So there was a lot going on in the background to Rabbeinu Gershom's life to when he made these takanas. But nonetheless, these takanas of Rabbeinu Gershom were made, figure if he died in 1040, so sometime around, you know, the year 1000 was when these takanas were made. Yet many of his takanas, although he was on one Rishon, many of his takanas were widely accepted, at least in Ashkenazic Jewry. L'mashal, the Rosh quotes that anything that was said by Rabbeinu Gershom was Kilu Nitna B'Sinai. That's a big statement to make about another Rishon. Obviously the Rosh was later than Rabbeinu Gershom, but Rabbeinu Gershom carries a lot of weight. And Rabbeinu Gershom definitely did make what's known as Charamim. He made takanas. He established various halachas throughout history, some that we're more aware of, some that we're less aware of. And we'll see tonight if possibly one of the things that he might have been misakim was also the prohibition of reading someone else's mail. So let's start like this. If we look over here in the Rishonim, many Rishonim bring down the prohibition of reading someone else's mail. If you look at number one, the Kolboy, now it's not so simple who wrote the Kolboy. No one knows who wrote that sefer. Kolboy was one of the great Rishonim. We're not sure who wrote that sefer. The assumption is the Kolboy was written by the same author of the Arches Chaim, which takes us to the 1300s. Now it's tricky because there's two Arches Chaim. There's Arches Chaim who was a Rishon, there's Arches Chaim Spinka, from Spinka, Chassidus. So when you read Tshuva Svarim and they quote the Arches Chaim, they'll usually write Arches Chaim, parentheses, Spinka. So you know it's not the Rishon, it's the Chassidish one. But the assumption is the Kolboy is a Rishon. So let's assume he was the Arches Chaim, so it's the 1300s, which was, let's assume, 300 years after Rabbeinu Gershom. So he writes like this, Ushlei lirois biksav sheshaleich adam lechaveri. You should not look at a letter that was sent to your friend, b'lo yidi asoi u'b'loi rishusai, without his permission and without his knowing. So, obviously we'll talk about letters, but this is very negay with emails today. Someone sends you an email, and the first thing you do is you forward it. Or someone sends you something, and you post it to a group. So, this would be not allowed, according to this prohibition. You're not allowed to read or to send other people's letters or mail without permission. Now, the Kolboy, this is at the end of the Kolboy, he writes, he has a chapter, and he titles it, Takanas of Rabbeinu Gershom. And he lists this as one of Takanas of Rabbeinu Gershom. So clearly the Kolboy felt that the one who made up this Takana was Rabbeinu Gershom. Now, he doesn't write explicitly Rabbeinu Gershom said this, but he has the heading of, look in the Sefer, the heading starts off, he has a perek called Takanas of Rabbeinu Gershom. The next heading is Takanas of a different Rishon. And he goes to all of Rabbeinu Gershom's Takanas. Now, some people are medayik from the Lashon of Shaloi Lirois Biksav Shesholach Adam Lichaveroi. We know the Gemara makes a drasha, Chaveroi is always coming to exclude a guy. So we're going to have to discuss, what about hacking the emails of a non-Jew? Is that also included in the prohibition? Maybe it's only a Jew. A non-Jew, you wouldn't be allowed to look at his mail. So that's a diak that maybe we can make in the Rishayim. If you look in the other source in Rishayim, in Meram in Rutenberg, in Meram in Minz, they say it a little differently. Cheirem shleiliroi speksav chever. There's a cheirem. Whatever that means exactly, the practical ramifications of a cheirem is that you're not allowed to read your friend's mail. Sheshalech lechaveroi below yidiyase aser. But three very important words. Imzarke mutter. But if he throws it away, then it's mutter. So if you go to your friend's garbage and he has all his mail sitting in front of his house waiting for the garbage to pick it up, you can go through all those letters. Now, in the Kolbe's version, he doesn't have those three edited words, which means under no circumstance, even if I take a letter that was sent to me and I throw it in the garbage, you still can't read it. You can never read my letters unless I give you permission. As opposed to the version of the Merami Rutenberg and the Merami Rintz, it comes out if you discard it, then it would be mut. So we're going to have to talk about this, obviously, in a halachic level, to what extent is considered discarding today that you would be allowed to read someone else's mail. So we clearly see in Rishayim, the Kolbe brings down this comment of mail. It's also brought down from the Merami Rutenberg and Merami Rintz. In Shas HaTshuvas B'nei Bonin, this is written by Rabbi Yehuda Henkin. Rabbi Yehuda Henkin lives today in Eretz Yisrael. He's an Enikol, he's a grandson of Reb Henkin that we know from the Lower East Side. Nebuch, the reason why this Reb Henkin became more famous than other times was because his son and daughter-in-law were Nebuch killed by Arabs in 2015 on Sukkot. That's why more people hear about him. That's not the reason why he should be famous. But he learned, he learned 7 years with his grandfather and got smicha from his grandfather. So you read his tshuva, he's quite a knowledgeable person. So Yehuda Henkin has a tshuva in his Sefer Shas, tshuva's b'nei banim, where he points out, he says he doesn't understand. Why does everyone say it's Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom not to read your letters? If you look in the Meram Rutenberg, Meram Minz, they don't say a word about Rabbeinu Gershom. They say it on their own. He writes over here, Rabbeinu Gershom, Mishenivtach v'kerem echtav chaver, lo'i nimtza b'feirush ha-rishayim, Rabbeinu Gershom, Mishetikin, as a chayim. Doesn't say anywhere that it's Rabbeinu Gershom, a takana. Now, he doesn't write this, but the Kolbe, it's Mephorish like that. If you look in the Kolbe, he writes a whole perek of takanas of Rabbeinu Gershom, and he puts one of them as letters. He's right. In the Meram Rutenberg, there's no raya. In the Meram Minz, there's no raya. But in the other Rishayim, there is a raya. So he doesn't know why everyone gives the credit to Rabbeinu Gershom. Who says it's really his takana? Maybe Taka wasn't. Now, it's really somewhat irrelevant because it's in the Rishayim either way. So if it's there, it's there. Who exactly was the author of it? Rabbeinu Gershom or Meram Rutenberg made it up? Either way, these were Gedalia Rishayim, and we're going to have to keep it either way. But that's the argument he makes, that everyone calls it Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom. It might not have been really Rabbeinu Gershom, the one who instituted the takana. But Lineda later tonight, we'll have to talk about, and let's say Rabbeinu Gershom wouldn't have, would it still be Usser? Meaning that Rabbeinu Gershom give us a massive chiddush that without his greatness, no one else could have thought on our own? Or it could be the reason why you're not allowed to open someone's mail is rather simple and basic. And even without someone like Rabbeinu Gershom, we still would have followed the same prohibition. That's another issue. That's the same question. Is A, what was Rabbeinu Gershom's motivation? And what would have been without his, takana, would we have still prohibited it? That's what we'll get to, hopefully, in a few minutes. Now, so again, it's clearly brought down in some Rishonim. Now, again, these are not the Sifrei Rishonim. It's not like in Shulchan Aruch anywhere. It's not in Rambam. It's not in Rif. But these were big Rishonim at that era. And clearly, this was already accepted in the times of the Rishonim. If you look in the Shulta Gibayrim was also of the Gedali Rishonim. The Svaradish Rishonim, but the Shulta Gibayim was kicked out of Spain. So we're talking about in the 1492, that time. The Shulta Gibayim is famous for his famous psak. He was the one who opened up shetels. So if you want to know why today women wear shetels, because the Shulta Gibayim has a piece where he talks about paying achris. He comes to explain why it's okay for a lady to wear a shetel, even though the shetels today look somewhat even better than real hair. So that was always the argument. So he has a shtickle, again, written in the 1500s, where he was married to shetels. But the Shulta Gibayim... That's right, right, right. He was a Svaradish Rishon, left Spain, ended up in Italy. But he Shulta Gibayim started writing when he was 23 years old. It's a good business. It's a good thing in the summer I have more time to do history, not so much time to learn, but I get to catch up a little bit more history. But the Shulta Gibayim has a piece in Nedim Sechah Shavuos, fascinating piece, where he talks about an interesting minhag. He writes, there used to be a custom clearly in the Svaradish Rishonim and Svaradish communities where people would write on the letters. When they'd send the letter, they'd write Chaim de Beinu Gershom, or someone who reads this Nochash Shenu, snake should bite him, to make people aware of the fact that there's a Chaim de Beinu Gershom. So he writes, let's say if you know this Chaim, the guy writes on the sticker, it says selling the storm stores, Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom, and you put it on your letter. So he writes,
even if the person who sent the letter wasn't someone who can normally give you a cheirim, in order to put someone else in cheirim, you have to carry a certain amount of power, and some regular guy who sends a letter doesn't have that power, but says they should look at it doesn't matter. It's automatic. Because Rabbeinu Gershom instituted it, if you put the stamp on the letter, it automatically goes into play. The person opens up automatically gets in the cheirim, given the davar nidoy, the bar nidoy, the Rabbeinu Gershom, who bedid. So there are those who want to be medayik. The Reb Chaim Palagi has a chiddush gadol. He's medayik from Meshulta Gibayrim. That if you don't put the stamp down, it's not usur. It's only usur if you put the stamp down. So if I send you a letter and I don't write on the letter Chaim Davenu Gershom, free for all, do whatever you want. And he learns the Meshulta Gibayrim that the whole time the prohibition only starts if you write. And then the chiddush is that if you do write it, the chiddush it goes automatically. Most achrenim didn't learn the Meshulta Gibayrim that way. They thought the chiddush of Meshulta Gibayrim was that it happens automatically. Where Hankin discusses Machlokes Rashi and Beit Otam, does the cheirim need to be put on or does it happen automatically? Does someone have to catch you in the act and say, oh, you read his letter, okay, now we're going to take you to Bezdin, and Bezdin is going to formally give you a cheirim? Or it's automatic. You did something which is wrong and the cheirim starts right away. So it sounds like from Shulta Gibayrim that the chiddush was that the cheirim begins automatically. What I wanted from the Shulta Gibayrim was, you see right in the times of the Rishonim, later Rishonim, the 1500s, this was a davar pasha. This was an accepted practice that everyone, again, svardish Rishonim. The reason why we're emphasizing that is because we know there are other Takanas Rabbeinu Gershom that Svarim did not buy into. Yet, ironically enough, for some reason, this one was very much accepted by the Svaradim, maybe even more so than Ashkenazim. As we'll see, many of the tshuvas that discuss this Shaila are Svaradish Rishayim. They took a very big interest in this Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom, although other Charomas Rabbeinu Gershom, they did not accept. So we clearly see in the Rishayim, both Ashkenazic and Svaradic, they accepted this idea of not reading other people's letters. Now let's talk about the other famous Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom, and as we'll see tonight, do we have the right to compare one Chaim to another? Okay, Rabbeinu Gershom made a bunch of Charomas. Do we have the right to say, well, if rules are by one like this, the same rules can apply to other ones? So let's talk about the two famous ones that everyone knows of. So the Mechaber passes the Shulchan Aruch in the beginning of Evan Ezer, Siman Aleph, number 5. The Mechaber writes, Noisa Odom Kama Noshim. A person can marry as many wives as he wants. Okay, v'hu de'ev shelemekem b'subukayu. You have to be able to afford them. There's certain chiyuvim you have to give to your spouse. So if you're going to take a lot of wives, you got to have a lot of jobs. However, writes the Mechaber, based on the Gemara, good idea, don't take more than 4. Sounds like under that you can handle. Okay, fine. Doesn't talk about the mother-in-laws. But okay, fine. So you can take 4. Why? So you can handle, be able to give time to each wife. Fine. So the Mechaber is very clear. No such problem of more than one wife. However, but if you're of a community that has a minhag to only take one wife, then you're not allowed to take more than one wife. So clearly, already in the times of the Mechaber, because the Mechaber is, you know, late 1500s, early mid-1500s, there was already minhagim in various communities not to take more than one wife. We all know from learning Mishnayis, Yevamis, Ksubis, all the Noshim, everyone was taking more than one wife. Look at the obvious. Everyone had more than one wife. That wasn't a Chiddush. There's no Torah prohibition nor rabbinic prohibition of having more than one wife. Yet, there was already a minhag creeping into Klal Yisrael at some time not to take more than one wife. Comes along number 6, which is the next halacha in Shulchan Aruch, Rabbeinu Gershom, Hichrim, Al Hanoyse, Al Ishto. Rabbeinu Gershom came out with a cheirim on marrying more than one wife. This is what we know today as Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom, that we're not allowed to have more than one wife. Avol b'yivama loy hichrim, but he never made it by yivama. Meaning, let's say a case would be where a person is already married, and now he falls to yibum, so now he's going to have 2 wives. So that Rabbeinu Gershom had no problem with, because you're doing it for the sake of a mitzvah. Right. That would be the simple answer. Although we'll see this, two shittas in Ramah is true even makom mitzvah. I'll get to that in a second. That was many times in the Gemara they were stopping. The Gemara seemed like at points in the Gemara they didn't want to do Yibam anymore because they felt that people are not mechavim for the right reasons. The Gemara talks about in theory, right. But look at the Ramah. The Ramah says, he says, what happens in the case of mitzvah? What would be a case of mitzvah? You're going to show im ishtei es shana v'lo yolda. Person's married to a lady for 10 years and they don't have kids. So now, he doesn't want to divorce his wife to have a wonderful marriage, but he wants to be able to have kids. So in that case, the Ramah has a possibility, and many Rishonim hold this way, that in that case, even Rabbeinu Gershom would allow him to take a second wife. Because b'makom mitzvah, come on, how can Rabbeinu Gershom stand in your way from doing a mitzvah peruvu? However, he writes, Omnam yesh cholkim v'svila d'chein Rabbeinu Gershom nog, afilu b'makom mitzvah. No, Rabbeinu Gershom was so stark about what he did, it was even in a case of a mitzvah, which obviously seems to be somewhat of a chiddush, but two shittas in Ramah would the din of Rabbeinu Gershom be even in a case where it would prevent you from doing a mitzvah. So clearly, this is a very strong takana of Rabbeinu Gershom. If you look at the Mechaber, right under it, the Mechaber writes, V'loi pashto tekanta b'chol ha'aratzais. But this was not accepted in all communities. Although the letter writing or reading was accepted, this prohibition was not. And then he says something even a bigger chiddush. He writes, the Ramah writes, V'da b'mokim sheyaduah shel pashto tekantoi. If you know your community never had it, fine. Avo min astam noig b'chol mokim. But if you come to a regular community, you can assume that it was adapted. Then he writes, "V'loy hichrim ella atzeifu elaf achamishi." Says the Mechaber, but this whole ban of Rabbeinu Gershom taking more than one wife had a time limit. It went until the end of the fifth thousand, or what means that tzeif elaf achamishi 5,000 counting from Bria Sa'olam, which means it was over in the mid 1200s. So according to the Mechaber, even if you accepted Rabbeinu Gershom, it was already over. It was built in with a time frame. Time frame's over. We're a few years past that already. Yes, and then it gets into shadows of Ein Aroi Liibam, Ein Aroi L'Chalitza. Yeah, I think Rabbi Nageshem would tell you that's a case of Roi Liibam. You could technically have Yibam with her, but we just don't let you do it for whatever reason. So, according to the Mechaber, Rabbi Nageshem expired already. Well, it was over.
Why would he limit it?
So that's the question. Why would Rabbi Nageshem limit this idea? Right, so that's the big question. This limitation, we'll see, this limitation came actually from a Marik. The Marik was the one who said that there's a limitation on this takana of Rabbeinu Gershom. Now, is it on all takanas of Rabbeinu Gershom or this one specific? That we'll see is also seemingly a big shaila. But clearly, according to the Mechaber, this one already lived its time out. The Ramah says it doesn't matter, because even if a taka finished in the mid-1200s, we adapted it to continue doing it because we realized this is taka a very good idea. Which means it might not be as strong as a Cheirim de Rabbeinu Gershom. Cheirim de Rabbeinu Gershom with all its trimmings might have already been over. But we have a minhag not to marry two wives. That's one Chaim de Benu Gershom.
Wasn't there a 1,000-year from
Rabbeinu Gershom? According to this, was until the end of the 500, at Soifu Elf Chamishi, until the end of the 5,000, which is 5,000, assuming from Priya Sa'ilam. So it's over in the mid 1200s. That's what he says, at Soifu Elf Chamishi. That's what it's quoted.
Also, that recently had a sunset provision a couple
of
years
ago. People were talking about by the year 2000. I don't know where it came at the year 2000. Soifu Elf Chamishi. So if you look in people, some either the 1200s, some say the 1300s, but it was over a long time ago. Yeah, give or take. So that seems to have been not negate. Now there's another famous Rabbeinu Gershom, which is halachically different than this one. If you look at number 7, the Mechaber Paskins, Yochel Gershom B'loy Daitei. You would be allowed to divorce a lady without her consent. For those of us learning getting them on Sunday morning, we know this over and over, and we lumb the size about this all the time, that Gershom is one of those unbelievable chaloisin that you don't need a consent for. That's a halacha in the Mishnayis without a doubt. Comes along the Ramah, V'chol Zeh Medinoi. That's by the letter of the law. Avol Rabbeinu Gershom Hichrim Shloi Legarish Isha Shlomi Daitoi. Rabbeinu Gershom made another famous takana that you're not supposed to marry a woman against her will. So we have two takanas of Rabbeinu Gershom. One is not to marry more than one wife, and one is not to divorce a lady without her consent. Now, what's interesting over here is if you look at number 9, and the bottom, the Ha'aris on the Torah, he writes, "Bedarkei Moshe leKasav Kanka the Kasav Sefalav Kabe Achirim Shloi Losis Beis Nashim Shachem Mugvel Osman." Over here, he doesn't say it was only till the end of the 5,000 years. Why is there no time limit to that? So he wants to say that the Rataka, the ban of divorcing a lady against her will, that was forever. Rabbeinu Gershom instituted that lenitzchias. The ban of not marrying more than one wife, that was a time limited. That was for that specific time in history. But the ban about divorcing a lady against the will, that was forever. So there's a truth from Yitzchok Chanan Spector where he discusses that there's halachic nafkaminos in these two takanas. Although they were both authored by Rabbeinu Gershom, they have total different halachic status. And he says one is more chomer than the other. He says this halach of not divorcing a lady against the will is widely accepted in all communities. Yet the prohibition of more than one wife was not widely accepted in all communities. Secondly, the prohibition of not marrying more than one wife had a time frame. It ended at Saif al-Vachamishi, while the prohibition of divorcing a lady against the will never had a time limit. That's even till today included. So he has a tshuva where he goes even a step further. Says in musical Chan Inspector, halacha ma'is, what would happen if a guy goes today and marries a second wife? He does it. So the Kedushin's Taif, there's nothing to talk about. She's married to the second lady. He'd have to give her a get. because as strong as Rabbeinu Gershom is, he can't affect that the Kedushin is still chal. However, he writes, if a guy would give his wife today a get against her will, the get is not chal. She is not considered divorced. That's how strong Rabbeinu Gershom's takana was about divorce, while not so strong when it came to polygamy. So we have two... B'loy da'ita means without agreeing to wanting to get divorced. So yeah, so she needs to agree. Now, people's talk about why Rabbeinu Gershom did this. It would sound like Rabbeinu Gershom would be one of the early believers in women's rights. You know, he seems like he's standing up for the woman. There are those who say because Rabbeinu Gershom lost his first wife, and his second wife was an almana. Now, at that time in history in Europe, in those years, an almana was in a very bad position. She really had no one to take care of her. They didn't really have their own jobs. They were really pretty much in a really bad situation. So it could be that Rabbeinu Gershom felt that to improve the lives of women by making these takanas would make their lives better going forward. But no one really knows why. When it comes to why you're not allowed to marry more than one wife, the Paiskim write because of ketata. It's going to lead to fighting. Women are going to fight with each other. We all know that. It would cause fights. Mishnayos talk about this already at Tzara, right? That's what they call the Tzara. But Rabbeinu Gershom's reason was not halachically motivated. And this is an important akud that the place can speak out. Rabbeinu Gershom's motivation of not marrying more than one wife that was not because he felt there was some halachic issue with marrying two wives. There's nothing halachically wrong with it. His issue was it's just a bad idea. It's maybe the ketata can lead to fights. So these are two chayim that Rabbeinu Gershom that everyone knows about, brought down in Shulchan Aruch, very widely accepted. Right, so according to Yitzchak Elchanan, the Kedushin is not chal. He held that the Kedushin is not chal on the second lady. So the Achrayim have very creative shailas and Nebuch Negea. And let's say you have a case of a couple who's married for 10 years and they don't have children. So now the guy has two choices. He can either take a second wife, which is a breach of Rabbeinu Gershom, or force his first wife to take a divorce, which is also a breach in Chayim to Rabbeinu Gershom. So what does this fellow do now? He's really stuck. Right? His wife doesn't want to get divorced. She wants to stay married. But he says, listen, I gotta have kids. I have a mitzvah. So he has two choices. He can take a second wife, which would be a breach of Chayim to Rabbeinu Gershom, or he can divorce his wife against the will, which is also a breach of Chayim to Rabbeinu Gershom. So there are tshuvas written. The Noi de Yehuda has a lengthy tshuva in the beginning of a Sefer Neven Ezer about what to do in such a case, and it's totally in the Ramah. Do we say that that b'makom mitzvah we can waive it? That's part of the discussion.
Didn't we say against the shalom daita? That means against her will.
I mean, she doesn't want it. And she doesn't want to get divorced.
That
we learned already about. That's shilas. Here it means that she doesn't want to. She has to consent to it. Now, obviously, there are ways to make people consent to things. There's money, and some people use force, which needs to be discussed. But you have to make sure that she's agreeing to being divorced. So these two charamas of Rabbeinu Gershom are more popular, and these are brought down in Shulchan Aruch. Now, it's not brought down in Shulchan Aruch, the charim of Rabbeinu Gershom or of any other Rishon of reading other people's mail. So why is it so prohibited? Right, there are many things. If you go through the list of the Kolba, he has a bunch of charamas over there. Interesting charamas that people have for different things, and they don't make it into Shulchan Aruch. So the reason why this one got a little bit more traction is if you look at number 10, you'll see all the Paiskim who do bring it down. The Moshul, number 10, the Beragoyl on Shulchan Aruch Yerodea, Shin Lamedalar brings down the prohibition of reading mail. The Knesset Gedoyl on Yerodea, Shin Lamedalar brings it down. Beki Yosef brings it down. Many contemporary Paiskim of that era bring it down. And then he adds a line over here. He writes over here, Roy Lahadgish, you should know. Ki shalaki chayim de Rabbeinu Gershom, asa lasi shtei noshim. Shalai niskala bakila sasfardis. This is different than the other charamas of Rabbeinu Gershom. Hare chayim de muva gam eitzel chach misfard. Yisayim zu not only is it brought down by the sfardish of Paiskim, me rabbis at chuvas a sekas bachayim de hu heim chach misfard. The majority of the chuvas who discuss the chayim were sfardish of Rishayim. So not all charamas are created equally. Some charamas were accepted by the sfardish community and some were not. So this one about reading letters was more widely accepted than the other charamis. So now the question is, let's assume Rabbeinu Gershom did make such a takana. Why? What was the motivation to ask you reading someone else's mail? Before Rabbeinu Gershom came along in the late 900th year 1000, if I walked into your mailbox, I picked up your letter, I opened it and I read it, and lo and behold, you owe Amex a lot of money. Wow, chiddush, right? What's the big deal? What would be so bad by reading someone else's mail? Now again, in today's world, this gets expanded beyond mail. Today it talks about phone tapping, which we'll have to talk about. If I want to phone tap your conversation, I want to hack into your email and read your private emails. Or private, even again, Pais can talk about reading someone else's medical records. Let's say I want to go to the doctor's office and read someone else's medical records. That would also be a breach in Chaim de Benu Gershom. Or let's say, for example, I want to read someone's private diary, journal. All these things that are private, that are mine, would all be included in Chaim de Benu Gershom.
Why would that be
enabled? Ah, so that's what we have to see. We're going to have to see why would it be us, sir? So that's what we need to talk about. So
when you send an email, it's not like you're like sending a letter. There is an understanding that once you send an email, that other people
If I send an email to you, it's automatically assumed that you're going to forward it to someone else?
No, but that other people might have access.
So we're going to talk about that. Let's say, for example, the Echreinim talk about, you know, phone tapping. So most people say you can't phone tap. That's illegal. But what happens if two people are having a conversation at the same table and I am? I have to stick my fingers in my ear and not listen to them? That's where all people pick up good hak, is over listen to other people talking. That can't be also, right? What type of world would it be? Right? So we're going to see, what are the boundaries of saying, well, this is beyond normal, or versus, well, if I send an email, let's, for example, Pais can talk about where, I don't know if it's again anymore in any offices where people send faxes. I don't know if it still happens. So when you send the fax, you don't know who's going to walk by and read the fax. So if you know you're faxing over your medical records, so it can be seen by the doctor, the nurse, the secretary, you know, the guy who's delivering lunch, you don't know who's going to see it. So the question is, there a certain amount of das where you kind of say to yourself, listen, I know this is what it's about. Now, you can't say that when I send an email, I'm expecting some Russian to hack it, and therefore I kind of have to understand that it's going to be public knowledge one day. I don't think that's something you have to expect. Now, the problem is today, everyone just forwards things. You get an email, you forward it. You get information, you forward it. So you're going to tell me, every single time I send you information, I'm expecting you're going to forward it, and it's going to end up on a bunch of different, you know, WhatsApps or in emails. We'll have to talk about what exactly can be forwarded and can't be forwarded. The question really is, among this, who owns the letter? Does the mishaleach still have rights to it, or is it the recipient? Which is really part of what was Rabbeinu Gershom's agenda. For who are we worried about? Is the sender send something that was delicate, or worried about the recipient? Who are we concerned about in the equation? Which has a big nafkamina la halacha. So the question is, what exactly was the reason for why you can't read other people's mail? And it's important because many of them will come out with nafkaminas la halacha to why exactly it would be us. Now, what are some of the possible reasons? So Reb Chaim Pelagi goes through about 5 reasons, and we'll see some of them are brought down in other places. So let's go with the first reason. I apologize, some of the Ma'amar Karim is a little hard to read. Some of them are written a long time ago. And even with Oitzar Chacham, I couldn't get the best print. So we'll try to do the best we can. If you look at number 11, in Halachas Katanas, Reb Yaakov Chagiz had a son, Reb Moshe Chagiz. It's worth mentioning. Reb Moshe Chagiz was a big kanoi. He got himself into big trouble. Reb Moshe Chagiz went up to fight against 2 very big gedolim in our history. One, Reb Yonis and Eipshitz. He was convinced Reb Yonis and Eipshitz was a Shabtai Tzvinik. And he was a big kanoi, Reb Moshe Chagiz. He didn't back down. So he was convinced that Reb Yonis and Eipshitz was a Shabtai Tzvi. Then after he was done with him, he was convinced that the Ramchal was a Shabtai Tzvi. So he waged war against everyone in Klal Yisrael, and he was a little bit of a kanoi. The saving grace to Reb Yaakov Chagiz was he kind of died before his son became this. Reb Yaakov Chagiz died young, so his son Moshe was young at that time. So he didn't see his son do all these wild things. Mm-hmm. But they say that Moshe Chagiz was a kanoi ben kanoi. So apparently his father was also a shtickle kanoi. Okay. So in Halachas Ketanas, Reb Yaakov Chagiz has a shayla. Someone asked him, Ma hanoi gim lichtev agabi higeres upagin, today that they write on the letters, the same thing we saw in the Shulchan Gibarim, they write, Chaim Debeinu Gershon, these types of references. He wants to know, Yesh B'mamish. Is there any significance to writing on the top of the letter, Chaim Debeinu Gershon? Does that mean anything? So he writes, if Yaakov Chizgiz writes, Tiritz, B'lav Ochi Nirish Yesh Osir. Forget that, it's still Osir. Why? There's an issue to go searching into the secrets of your friend. Why? Umali Loiselech Rachel Achirim Oyla Atzmai. He thinks it's the issue of Loiselech Rachel. As it is to the Torah postulation, the Selech Rachel, don't peddle information. Don't be what we call today a hacker. See what's going on, everyone else's business. So he says, reading someone else's mail, is that prohibition? Now again, you have to go through the Mishnah Berurah Shmei Salasha. He has a whole chapter on Rechilas, what's really a Rechilas, what's not Rechilas. It's a very big sugya. But the Halachas Ketanas, Yaakov Chagiz, in a very shorthanded way of saying it, is basically saying that reading someone's mail would be a problem under the letterhead of what we call today, Leiselech Rachel Ba'amech. Pashtus, we're going to talk later tonight about, let's say, kids. What about parents opening their kids' letters? It's more negated to kids that get married, and their parents are still getting their bills. Can they open them? We're going to talk about some of these shilas. We're going to talk about some more creative shilas. If there's time, we'll get to some more creative shilas about parents who want to read their kids' private journals because they think they're doing something wrong. Would a parent or the yeshiva or a mechanech be allowed to crack into the child's cell phone or emails to see what their kid's really up to see if they're doing things they shouldn't be doing, would that also be a breach in Chaim Debeinu Gershom? In that case, Debeinu Gershom's takanos would be waived because there's a justifiable reason for why you're doing it. We're going to have to see. Right, Mevakeh Mitzvah, that's going to be telling that Ramah. That's what we're going to talk about, some of the Svara. So the first reason that's brought down over here has to do with the Svara of Loiselech Rachel Ba'amecha. Now, what's interesting is, if you're going to go with Loiselech Rachel Ba'amecha, so number 13, if you look in the Chikhe Leiv, which is a B'chaim Pelagi Sefer, B'chaim Pelagi Tainet, Rabbi Loiselech Rachel Ba'amecha, V'loi B'goyim. The whole prohibition of Loiselech Rachel Ba'amecha, that's only by one of yours, one of ours, by a Jew. V'imkein Yemut Alukim Michtav Shigoy Shalach. You'll be allowed to email, you'll be able to hack into emails of non-Jews. So if that's true, says Chaim Pelagi, according to the Svar of Loiselech Rachel, that's only for Jews. So if you want to break into information, sensitive information about a guy, that wouldn't be a problem. Now he writes later on, obviously there's a cheshbon of Chel Hashem. If you get caught hacking into emails of non-Jews, it's going to be front page news, so therefore it's not a good idea, because it's Chel Hashem. But I'll see Isser of what we call Chendom and Negershim, of reading other people's mail, as only for a Jew and not for a guy. That's what the Chikkei Lev of Chaim Pelagi thinks would come out according to Halachas Ketanos. Now, there's another reason that's brought down. This is from the Marchash, from Reb Chaim Shafti. This is also Svardisha Paisik, late 1500s, 3 years, 4 years after Abenu Gershom's Takana. This is even harder to read, where he writes like this. He says, the reason why you not read other people's letters is, he says, because he was talking about a shayla where a guy broke into someone else's letter. Reuven was sent to deliver a letter to Shimon, and Levi intercepted it and read it for himself. The question is, what should we do with Levi? Beat him, knas him. There was a movement that at one time in history they used to financially knas people who would read other people's mails. But he says, what should you do? He writes, it's like you're using your friend's thing without his permission. We're number 12. He says, "Vafilu dvar mitzvah." Even if I use my friend's thing for a mitzvah, it's also aser. Over there, she'ela aser. K'may shkasev ator v'litol talz chavei b'loy da'at. If you want to take your friend's talz, what I'm asking him. So yeshayim shehu mutter. Some say it's mutter. Why? Dinichle inch the mave mitzvah b'mayna. Because I want you to use my talz to a mitzvah. But if I want to take your basketball to go to the backyard and play, so that's not the posh that I'm allowed to take it. Why? Because there's no mitzvah involved, and you may actually harm my basketball. You could pop it. You can ruin it. He writes, therefore, even by a talus, you have to make sure you fold it properly, because if you don't fold it properly, it's a problem. So he writes, so the reason why you're not allowed to take someone else's letter is because you're not allowed to take other people's things all the time. I have no right to take your stuff. Your private letters, mails, and information is yours. That's called gneiva. If I take your stuff, even though, again, here it's not a physical gneiva, this is an intellectual gneiva, but he includes that in the prohibition of shoyel shloimi das. The same way I can't take your car for a joyride for the fun of it, that's called gneiva. So taking other people's things is considered gneiva. Gneiva's das is another reason the place can bring down. But he's going with mamish gneiva al shoyel shloimi das gazlin. Gemara in Bamatzia, shoyel shloimi das gazlin. Then he says that not only is it a shayla of being a ganif, in the last piece, this is a very important piece. He writes, most of the times when you read someone else's letter, it's going to hurt him. And that's why I kind of wanted to do it. That's, for example, in the last election, by hacking into emails, you were able to possibly change the outcome of the election. So let's say someone would hack into someone else's email and cause him a loss. Would you be able to mun him money? Would you be able to say, you cost me money? I lost my job now. My boss got fired because he saw all these things I wrote about him or what I wrote about the company. And you leaked them. Would that be a financial obligation? So the Teres Chaim Shabti Tainas, that's Grumma. That'd only be Grumma. Right? The whole shayla Grumma versus Gami. But he writes at the end, this is very important. He says, maybe, yeah, chayiv, maybe not chayiv, but it's definitely aser. You can't do something that potentially could cause someone else a loss. They ain't suffik. Most of the time, when you read other people's private information, it will cause some form of a loss. Let's say it won't be a financial. But if you read someone's private journal letters, maybe secrets will come out that will not necessarily affect them financially, but the way people look at them, their interactions with people, if you find that people's secrets, you can change their life. What? All right? So he writes, therefore, so we have to punish this guy to make it clear to the world that this is not something we do in Judaism. So he has an interesting spin on it, that not only would reading people's secrets cause financial loss to people, it will just cause them embarrassment possibly, or the way people look at them. So this is something we want to stay clear of, even though we can't be taken to court for doing such a thing. That's something we want to stay clear of. There was a case in America here a few years ago about firefighters, where the firefighters were given cell phones by FDNY, and they were supposed to use them for firefighting, whatever they needed for firefighting related issues. And this firefighter, not such a chacham, was using it to discuss, to talk to a mistress of his. And the fire company found out and they fired him because it's not proper ethic. And they said, you can't touch my, those are my text messages. You have no right to. They said, no, we own them. We gave you the phone, we own them. Which is more of a legal debate of who owns what. For example, if you work for a company and you're using their email server, who owns those emails? But the point is, in that case, you can make the argument, well, you have no right to be megalo that to people. Maybe, yeah, maybe that's what the Torah is saying. If you're going to take people's emails, text messages, private journals, and they're going to open up a mess with people, that could be a real halachic concern. So that's what he's saying, is just stay clear of everyone else's private life, let it stay private. So that's the first two reasons. Either Leiselech Rachel, or because Gainiv Shleimi Das. Now, if you look over here, number 13... Yeah, it would be a hard sell to say... Oh, we're going to get to that in a second. I'm going to get to that in 1 second. So that's Reb Chaim Pelagi. Reb Chaim Pelagi, if you think the Teres Chaim was hard to read, Reb Chaim Pelagi said V'chikele was even harder to read. I figured that much I can't be mitzvah people to try to read it. So I quoted it from another sefer. But if you look at number 13, they quote B'shaz Rechuvah V'chikele, that's Reb Chaim Pelagi sefer. He writes... I'm sorry, in number... In number 15, he quotes Chikki Lev, he says, the Yesh Lachkar, me'ezetam osu Rabbeinu Gershom davizeh. He starts off, why Rabbeinu Gershom asur it? So he says, im nem reshom mashom mechazal. V'haftar recha kamoichem ada alach sari lechavecha loisavid. The easy way out. It's not right. I wouldn't want you reading my private mail, so don't read someone else's mail. The Achreinim have a kash on this, is because they say, 1 second, there's a lot of things in Chayish Mishpat I wouldn't want you doing, but it doesn't make it asur. You know, this is a very broadened term. You know, I wouldn't want you taking that parking spot. So if you take this parking spot, now you tell me it's a breach of, everything's a breach of a haftal yachad kamaycha. It's a very, very vague definition to say anything I wouldn't want is automatically included in the issa deraisa or asay deraisa of the haftal yachad kamaycha. But Reb Chaim Pelagi suggests such a possibility. Right, right. It's just something that, basically, we don't need a specific reason. It's something that we shouldn't do.
You've got to believe that historically something happened.
So that's what historians debate. What motivated at that time in history? Exactly. Like what was going on at that time in history where some historians suggest what was going on at that time in history is when businesses were picking up and people were sending much more letters about business-related matters. And if I were to start, you know, intercept it, I would cause a lot of harm to people's businesses. And that was at the time when businesses were really starting to get moving. That's what some people suggest. But again, you're 100% right. It's very important to connect it to the historical time and what was going on in Germany in that part of the world to why this ban came about. Now, points out Reb Chaim Pelagi again, if it's after Acha Kamaycha, Goyim are not included with after Acha Kamaycha. You don't have to love a Goy like you would yourself. So if that would be the Sibas Isser, it would come out that you would be allowed to do that to a Goy. That's one Svar of Reb Chaim Pelagi. And then he comes up with a fourth Svar. Right, then you have Eva Chal Hashem, obviously we're assuming that won't happen. And then his final svar that Reb Chaim Pelagi suggests is what? The Efshur Issahu Mishum Goinev Das Abrius. What we know today as Gnevas Das. You don't have no right to steal people's private secrets. Shari Loi Gare Mehaganev Das Chaveri. Now, the Achrayim ask, that's not what Gnevas Das is. Gnevas Das is not me stealing your secrets. Gnevas Das is me lying about who I am. But the classic example of Gnevas Das is cheating on a test. When you cheat on a test, so you're saying that you're a 100 student. You're not a 100 student. You're a 50 student who sat next to a kid who's a 100 student. So that's Gnevas Das, which means you're going to go get a job and everyone's going to look at you thinking you're this Mitsuyan and you're not really a Mitsuyan. That's typical Gnevas Das. Here it's the backwards of Gnevas Das. I'm stealing what's in your mind. I'm taking your thoughts and making them mine. That's the backwards as opposed to me faking about what I am. So the Pelayayetz has a shtickle where he says, no, this is also including Gnevas Das, being megalis someone's secrets is also including the prohibition of Gnevas Das. Okay? So those are the four major reasons brought down in Rishonim / Achrayim to why would it be usur to look at someone else's mail, and according to some of them, it would not apply to a guy, which is somewhat negeah. If a person has a coworker, again, not that I'm endorsing such behavior, because I don't know what the legalities of it are, and I don't want to endorse behavior that's against the country, but assuming that it's not illegal, whatever it is, according to at least two pshatim in the Achrayim, it would not be usur to hack a guy's email or read his mail.
If you suspect that the other person is a Russia.
So we're going to get to that. What happens if you have a reason to reading his mail because you think he's sending an email to the boss to say to fire you because you did X and Y? So if you can step in the middle and read that letter, read what's going on and fix it, you'd be able to save yourself from loss and other things. That's a big machlokes Achrayim, and hopefully we'll get to that in a few minutes. Now, Reb Chaim Pelagi, the way he set it up was that he thinks that if it's als Leiselech Rachel, I'm sorry, that if it's als Gnevas Das, then it would be asa for a guy. The same way you're not allowed to steal from a guy, you're not allowed to do gneva from a guy. But he quotes over here number 17 from Zilberstein, who quotes from Rabbi Yashiv, that Rabbi Yashiv disagreed. Rabbi Yashiv writes over here, Shema shechidish achikei leiv shalfi ha-teres chayim, also liftoyach michtav shalgoy michshash gezel, that what he wanted to tie that according to the teres chayim, that the reason is shoyl shlamidas gazlin. So if it's gzeli, you can't do gzeli from a guy. Contrary to popular opinion, there is a prohibition of stealing from non-Jews. So Rabbi Yashiv says, you're right. There is a prohibition to actively go out and steal from a guy, but he writes that since it's a chiddush, why? There is a machlokes apoyskim, is it also to steal from a guy? Okay? Made that very clear. We pass it's also the right to steal from a guy. But Rabbi Yashiv said to take that to the next step and say, not only am I not allowed to steal from a guy, I'm not allowed to look at his letter, which is considered stealing. Rabbi Yashiv said, I'm not willing to go that far. So Rabbi Yashiv held that even according to the reasons brought down of the Teres Chayim, that's Gneva, it would not expand on, would not be continued for a guy, and it wouldn't be also for a guy, which is the Chiddush. No. There's no mitzvah shows by a guy. This is the chiddush of Rabbi Yashiv, although Reb Chaim Palagi sets it up somewhat in a different way. There would be a big nafkemina to shayls that Achrayim talk about, is let's say after someone dies, and you go into, you know, the deceased's, you know, house, and there's all these letters and notebooks and all these things, and everyone wants to read through it. It's all gishmak to read about what happened, you know, in the early years. But who says you have the right to read any of that? That stuff is all their private letters. Letters that were sent to them or diaries that they kept. Why would one be allowed to read those mechtav? So that Achrayim want to say it's telling in which reason you go with. If it's alzva haftal reacha kamaycha, it's not a geir. The deceased is no longer a kamaycha. It's not a problem. If it has to do with the fact that there's gnevas das, so who you're being gained from? Loiselech rochel ba'amecha, there's no rechilus over here. If it's Al's Gneva, well, you're being gained from the Yershim. Who exactly are you stealing from? So it's not clear over here what prohibition would still be over here. It might, right. So that's the old issue. If it's still going back to the sender, you still might have that problem, which we need to talk much more about. So that's an interesting shayla that comes up, I'm sure, many times. So people after relatives leave over Mechtavim, many people love to go through it and read about it. It might be totally in which reason it's not allowed to whether or not it would fit in a case of a deceased family member. Now, the big shiloh over here is, who was the ban trying to protect? Was the Chaim de Ben Gershom trying to protect the sender or the recipient of the letter? Who are we concerned about? I send something that's very delicate. What am I worried about? That someone else is going to read what I sent? Or it's the recipient, whatever, the delicate information for him? What's the nafkamina? Is that, let's say I send something delicate to the recipient and he decides to forward it. I'm very happy he decided to forward it, but I sent him something private about my life and he's sending it around the neighborhood like he owns it. Who's the Bala boss on the letter once it's sent out? Does it belong to the sender or does it belong to the recipient? Well, obviously, would there be a level of depending on what the matter is as well. So back to the Halachas Ketanas, Reb Yaakov Chagiz has another tshuva where he discusses this shayla, where he writes, Hamoitze Igeres Psucha Peshuk. Let's say you find an open letter in the street, the Kass of Alei Upagin, again, he writes the same Upagin. Clearly, that was very accepted in the Sfaradish community, they all wrote that. He says, "Am I allowed to read it? It's opened." So he writes, "Nehi del gabi hamikabel, ikol lemei makivin denofel isyariv v'loy choslei." You could say the recipient of the letter, it's open. So I mean, someone read it. It means it was delivered to the recipient. He opened it. He read it. Felt like there's nothing sensitive, and he threw it in the middle of the street. But says Reb Yaakov Chagiz, "Avol sheleach shemein eroitzi sheyudu be'asakov." What about the sender? I send you a sensitive letter, well, you decide to throw it in the garbage. But it's my life that's on that letter, not yours. My private information is on that letter. So the fact that you decide to throw it in the garbage doesn't mean anyone can come and read it. So he's taking the argument that it's totally in the mishaleach, that it's the sender that we're concerned about, not the recipient. Then he writes over here that ulefizem hochasuma koshkin chein ligabav v'chayev la'achzer. Demistame ein loyim esher shlichu kaidim. If it's sealed, for sure you have to give it back, because then no one read it. The only problem with this shtickle Torah is that how do you read the line in the Rishonim that im zarkei mutter? We brought from the Maharam in Rutenberg said if you take a letter and it's discarded, you're allowed to read it. Why am I allowed to read a letter just because the recipient discarded it? Why is that a raya that the Mishaleach didn't have sensitive matter in it? So they want to tie in that this Yaakov Chagiz obviously didn't have the girsa like the Merami Rumberg. He had the girsa like the Kolbei. The Kolbei never said anything about him Zorki Mutter. Because just the fact you can't throw it away, you're not the Bailam on it. You have to take into consideration the Mishaleach connection to the letter, and therefore you can't discard a letter. Which means, Lefizeh, if someone sends you an email, which you don't feel is going to reflect negatively about you, you can't forward it. Because you have to take the Mishaleach into consideration. Now, if the person who started the email has nothing to lose about this email, it's an email about, you know, a share that's taking place in the neighborhood, so of course you can forward it. But if there would be something in that email that would be negative for the Mishaleach, just because that he sent it to you would not give you, at least according to Yaakov Chagiz, would not give you the right to forward it to another person. Now, Shevet HaKahasi, Rabbi Gross, from Bnei Brak, so he talks about the same Chakira. He writes, V'hine, Mishakibo Michtav Me'acher. Someone gets a letter from someone else. The recipient lets anyone read the letter. Is that enough to say that you don't need the rishus from the sender? What we call today, if someone forwards an email, is they have the right to forward it. And his answer was, depends. If I write to you, don't show this to anyone else, then it's pashut. Then it's also to show it to other people. Nothing to talk about. If I tell you clearly that this is a sensitive matter, I don't want it to be shown to anyone else, then clearly you're breaching this Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom. But he writes a bigger Chiddush. Ela afilu loikas of loshos la roisa. Let's say I don't tell you you're not allowed to show it to other people. If you can figure out that by sending this to other people, it could potentially harm the sender, also la haroisa b'li rishos, you would not be allowed to forward that without his permission. So clearly he's taking the side that you, like the halachas katanas, you have to take the mishaleach, you have to take the sender's feelings into consideration. Right. That would be included in basic, you know, common decency. Now, at the end of the piece, he quotes from the stipler that the stipler disagreed. He writes in number 20 that at this time they came up with a new sefer called Halichas van Hagos from the stipler, and the stipler wrote not like that. Someone asked the stipler, the same question. Someone sends you a letter and you want to show it off to people. So they asked the stipler, do I need to get permission from the sender? And his answer was, v'heshiv, shemaspik rishus mehamekabel. No. As long as the recipient gets it, he can do whatever he wants with it. So if you want to know why you're allowed to forward emails today, the answer is based on the stipler. According to the stipler, you can forward anything you want.
Unless the sender put a limitation.
Right. So if the sender says explicitly, so according to the... Right, according to the Shevet HaKasi, that would be a problem. Now, there are those who want to make the two things work and say, well, we're talking about two different cases. The stipler was talking about where there was nothing necessarily damaging to the Mishaleach. But there's no way the stipler would say that if you have a letter that would damage the Mishaleach, you can go around forwarding it. That doesn't make any sense. So they want to say even the stipler who permitted forwarding emails, equivalently of forwarding emails, he would only permit in a case where there would not be any negative effects for the Mishaleach. Okay. That's all with regard to forwarding emails and sending private messages received to other people. What about what's called open letters? Let's say, for example, today you get a postcard. Postcard's open. Nothing's closed. It's open for all to read. If you work in the post office and you get open letters, you're not allowed to look at them. Or let's, for example, you get mail for someone else and it's like, oh, you know, postcards from camp. I'm having a great time in camp. Send me more money and food, right? That's where they all look anyways. Would that be a prohibition of Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom? So the Aruch HaShulchan is misupik about it. And number 21.
What about postcards where it's open
right
on the postcard? Wouldn't that be different than a closed
yes
field?
We're going to see that's what that Chaim makes such a distinction. If you look in the Aruch HaShulchan, he talks about a case of what he calls open letters. So Aruch HaShulchan talks about a case of he writes lahalacha shloi likra michtav chaver shloi b'shusoi ella im kein zarkoi. He quotes this what we call Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom or Kolbei or Merami Rumberg. He says v'ani mistapik b'zman hazeh shahar b'shochem michtovim psuchim. People send open letters al be'edoa. Now it's not clear what he was referring to. Open letters. It means they didn't bother to seal it. It doesn't. Pashas doesn't mean postcards. Em muta likra behem kimin she'inei master oisoi. If you don't bother to seal it, that means you don't care if anyone reads it. So the Aruch HaShulchan was misupik, if you don't bother to seal it, for example, one could have argued, well, if I send something openly, I know people can read it, therefore I'm basically saying is that I'm leaving it open to the public. Would that still be included in the prohibition? The Aruch HaShulchan says he's not sure. Now, at the end of the Aruch HaShulchan is interesting. He writes that if you look in Merami Rumberg, there are many Chayramas of Rabbeinu Gershom. He writes, every community knows which ones made it and which ones didn't make it. Some of them did, some of them didn't. So Aruch HaShulchan is Mesopik. Reb Yehuda Henkin says in number 22, he writes this Pasha to him, in Kasav al Giloi postcard Balaz, He thinks the Achashulchan was talking about a postcard, and he thinks it's pasht to him that a postcard, not a problem at all. Even though the Achashulchan was Mesubik, he thinks it's pasht. If you look at number 23, they quote in Rebbe Sefram, he quotes from Rebbe Gifter. Rebbe Gifter said also, if you have what's called the Gilua's Doar, an open letter, again, not clear what they mean. Do they mean you don't bother sealing the envelope, or it means like a postcard? But Rebbe Gifter held, if you have an open letter, so therefore you didn't care enough to enclose it, you obviously don't mind if people read it. So there are those who could say, well, if you didn't care enough to ensure that your email can be protected by having extra protection, it's like you're saying, well, anyone can come read it. I don't think that's true. I think that's an extreme level of involvement. As opposed to, let's say, for example, you'd send something with openly and then say, well, why is it being forwarded around? Well, because that's what happens when you send things today. People tend to forward things. So you have to know, do we have the right to jump and say, well, the same way an open letter the Achreinim are mesupik about, and many of them permit it, so too, if you have something like an open email where you don't limit it or you don't restrict it, or other people can get to it and read it, for example, that was what we were talking about by the fax. If you send the fax, you're kind of saying, I know it's open, someone's going to get to it. So then in that case, there's some form of almost a mechila. Right. So then,
it's right.
I'm not convinced that everything is equal. I think each case is going to have to be downed upon separately to see whether or not it fits this criteria. We're going to get to that. Yeah. We're going to get to that at the end of the shir.
I
Mr. Brura, the Shemir Saloshin in the Sefer Chavetz Chaim, based on Gemara Numa, where he says, forget Isurim. This is just, there's a concept of don't know other people's business. If they want to let you know, they'll tell you. It's a Gemara Numa. It's at the end of, on page 40. I hope to get to Blineda tonight. But right.
But somebody else shouldn't go ahead.
Yes. That's what we're going to see. Such a chiddush. We're going to see that the Shevet HaKasi makes even a bigger chiddush. He says, if I send an open postcard and I don't care if the mailman reads it, but I do care if you read it,
yeah.
The mailman's one guy. He's professional, or he doesn't care about the private, what goes on in the firm community. But if my next door neighbor reads my letter, well, I do care. So he's mechalik between open letters between friends and business purposes. That's his opinion. Reb Zilberstein, wants to say that maybe there's a difference between a postcard and an open letter. When the Chashochan talks about an open letter, he doesn't mean a postcard. Open letter means you didn't bother sealing it. Okay, that doesn't mean I'm giving it the permission for everyone and to read it. As opposed to a postcard, that's the tzura of how it's given. So if you send the postcard, you're basically saying I'm expecting everyone and anyone to read it. So he wants to make such a chilk. So open letters is somewhat debated whether or not it's involved in Chaim Dabbeinu Gershom. The bigger shaila is there ever a time where we'd be allowed to, or Rabbeinu Gershom himself would have waived the prohibition because there's some form of a justified reason to read someone else's emails or letters? Can I come up with a scenario where I think it's so important for me to read your emails or to phone tap your conversations that Rabbeinu Gershom would tell me I'm allowed to do? And this is, I think, the more exciting part of things, whereas when would I be allowed to read, again, putting aside the legal laws of whatever the American law is, would I be allowed to read other people's mail, assuming Jews, which is for sure aser, because I feel there's some te'elis that I need to read it. So if you look in the Halachas Katanas, back to Yaakov Chagiz, number 26, he talks about the same shayla. He talks about the case of a shaleich sav biyad chaveri, chasim bepagin. Can I have a letter that I'm supposed to deliver? I feel that in this letter that I'm about to deliver is something that's going to harm me. You know, my next neighbor is writing this long letter. He tells me to deliver it to my boss. I know what that means. He's not saying how great I am and I should get a raise. He's writing all the negative things about me. I'm going to lose my job. So would I be allowed to open up this letter, read through the letter, and be able to answer up all the tainas when my boss comes to me and has claims on me? And something which is probably very negated today in many scenarios. So his answer was, absolutely not. Not. You're not allowed to do that. You're still not allowed to read those letters. It's a little cut off, but he writes in the tshuva, if you were to open that letter, you'd be a breaching of Chaim Dabbeinu Gershom. Okay, so what do you do? So listen to what he says you should do. So he says, either return it to the owner, or throw it out. So you have two choices. Either bring it back to the saying, listen, find someone else, or discard it, destroy it. So Rav Asher Weiss asked, he says, 1 second. Since when is Gzela Mutter? I don't understand. You're worried about being over Chaim Dabbeinu Gershom, so therefore you say, no, I'm not going to read the letter. So instead I'll destroy it, be mazik moment chaveroi, which is an issue for sure. How does this make any sense? So Rav Asher Weiss writes in a piece that this is a tzarechitim, how do you understand this halachas ketanas? Why is stealing or being mazik a better option than being over Chaim Dabbeinu Gershom? In any case, it's clear from Rabbi Yaakov Chagiz that there's no option to say, well, it's going to cause me a harm. It doesn't matter. That's not a heter to be over Rabbeinu Gershom. Yeah, it's not kishmak and it's a horrible situation, but that's not a heter. Reb Chaim Pelagi thinks it's mutter. Reb Chaim Pelagi has a piece where he says that if it's going to be harmful for you, On top of that, if let's say it would be goyim, let's say, for example, if you have a coworker who's sending an email to someone and you know there's damaging information for you in that email, he holds that you'd be allowed to read it and go through it if it's going to save you from a potential loss. That's what Reb Chaim Palagi holds, not like Reb Yaakov Chagiz. Reb Moshe Shtermach in Tshuvas on Haggis has a tshuva where he talks about such a shayla. He talks about a shayla of number 27, the drashti me Yehudi Echad, shay besichsachim chaveri. Two Jews were in a fight. Shabareach v'chayv l'rivvayis rand. Rand. He was talking about he was still in South Africa. Two Jews were in a fight about money, and one guy left. And they were arguing who owes who money. V'achshav nofol yodim michtav amyud l'baldinoi. And now the guy has a letter, a private letter, that would enable him to win his din Torah and collect the money that is his. So the question presented to Reb Moshe Shtermach, would I be allowed to read that letter? Let's say I know there's certain emails or there's certain letters that I can dig up that would say, yes, he wrote an email to a third party where I talk, Reuven money, and I can get that email and I can win the din Torah. Would I be allowed to read those letters in order to save me money? That was the shayla presented to Reb Moshe Shtermach. So first, Reb Moshe Shtermach says that you have to understand that not all charamas of Rabbeinu Gershom were created equally. This chaim of Rabbeinu Gershom wasn't done just for the sake of improving the lives of one and two individuals. This was done because there might be a suri derais involved. Meaning, Rabbeinu Gershom said, you're not allowed to marry two wives. What would halakhically be wrong with marrying two wives? The answer is nothing. It would be katata. It would be bad for the shalom bayis of having more than one wife. But he says, Reb Moshe Shtermach, when Rabbeinu Gershom asked this, was because Rabbeinu Gershom felt there's too many other possible surim involved in reading other people's mail, and that's why he prohibited it. So he says, but I think it's mutter. Because we have a principle in halacha, avid inish dinah l'nafshei. We spoke about that a couple of weeks ago, that you have the right to take matters into your own hand. The same way I'm allowed to beat you up to get the money that's deserved by me. So why is this any different? If I'm allowed to hit you, and gradually the Shulchan Aruch writes that when you hit another Jew, you're also put into cherim. Same cherim. People don't know that. If you hit other people, you're also into cherim. So if I'm allowed to hit another person to protect my money, so I'm allowed to do this also. However, writes in Moshe Shtermach, he says, I'm not so quick to be matred because I'm not so sure everyone's so honest with themselves. We always say to ourselves, I need to read his mail because I know something's going down. And you read his mail and it's nothing with nothing. So we're so quick to justify things. Moshe Shtermach says, I can't give an open heter that we can always read people's mail because it might cause us a loss of money. He says, what you should do is you should bring it to three outside people, three gedolim, and let them decide if reading this letter or reading this email would become helpful to your situation. So he wants to say that although in theory he thinks it's mutter, he's not willing to go so fast and say, well, yeah, fine, no problem, do whatever you want. It has to be honest that it really makes a difference. So he says, bring it to someone else, let someone else read it, and say that this is going to be for your tails.
Right.
So we're very quick to assume that everything is going against us, you know, not always. So in theory he thinks it would be mutter, but he's not willing to say that you're allowed to do it. So that's what we're going
to
get to now.
I'm not allowed to read that letter. That's
so that's the question. When do the Rabbeinu Gershom extend, and who doesn't it extend to? To wrap off the Sefer Madani Yomtif, he wants to tell you that it's mutter to save yourself based on an interesting Beis Yosef quote to Rashba. The Rashba in the Tshuva says about a case where Reuven thinks his wife is doing things that might not be proper. Reuven shirah beishtei dvar ma'ra'im shezinsa. So imtikam Rabbeinu Gershom shayigashenu. He wants to know, I have a case where I think my wife was mezana. I think she can't stay in the house. But she says, yeah, you need my consent to divorce me. I'm not going anywhere. So he says, come on, Rabbeinu Gershom was never there to help people do averus. That wasn't Rabbeinu Gershom's idea. Was for a lady to be mezana, which makes her usul baila, and she gets to stick around because, I'm not consenting to the divorce. So the Sefer Madani Yomtif wants to say, same thing here also. If the whole purpose of Rabbeinu Gershom was not to make that you're going to lose money. Now this is a very big jump that this fellow is making in the Sefer. One would have thought Isurim are different than losing money. The fact that you're saying you're going to lose money, the same thing as a wife being mezana living with her husband, that's a large jump. But he wants to tie into that the same way Rabbeinu Gershom wasn't there to help people do Isurim, Rabbeinu Gershom wasn't there to help people win, to help people lose money. So if you're going to lose money in a din Torah where you rightfully deserve the money, Rabbeinu Gershom was never in such a case. Yeah, right. We have to figure out how far to extend it. In the Sefer Aseilah Harav from Reb Chaim David Halevi, who was a chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, he took over from Reb Avad Yosef's job as chief rabbi. So he has an interesting shaila about a school where the school thinks there's a certain girl that's sending letters. This is before text messages and emails. She was sending letters to people she shouldn't be sending letters to. I'm assuming some form of a boys. So the question was, can the school have a right to intercept those letters and read them to see what she's talking about, who she's talking to, things like that. The Shah is, what do you do with Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom? So the Cheshb that he makes with Chaim David Halevi, he wants to go back to what we started off in the beginning of the year. He wants to say, well, it depends. Is the Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom even b'makim mitzvah?
And he says, well, it doesn't matter, because this is Makam Aveira. The girl might be doing things which are detrimental to her life. She might be doing things which are very bad. So he wants to say, even if there's machloekes achrayim about the makam mitzvah, but makam aveira kulei amam moida, you'd be allowed to. Which is, I don't know why he doesn't bring it, but it's before Shira Rashba. That was the Rashba we saw. Rabbeinu Gershom never made his takano, so kids can do things behind their parents' back and their parents not know about it. That was never what Rabbeinu Gershom thought of. I don't know why he doesn't quote this Beis Yosef, but he says the other way. He says, even if there's a machloekes about the makam mitzvah, makam aveira kulei amam moida. But he does write at the end of the tshuva, he says, but it should only be read by those people who need to read it. You don't have to have the entire faculty read this girl's diary. The one teacher who's involved, the one principal, you don't need the janitor being involved in reading the girl's journal. Keep it private. As much as we can keep it private, we should keep it private. He writes over here that Rabbi Leo Katz, who was also one of the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael, he wanted to tell you, what's the big shaila? Why are you allowed to ever hit your kid for chinuch purposes? We spoke about this last week, maybe not during the 3 weeks. But why are you allowed to hit your kid? What happened to the law of the Torah? The answer is because we waive certain assurim for purposes. So if you're hitting your kid for a purpose, it's not awesome. So if you're reading someone else's mail for a purpose, it's not awesome. Same idea. Why is it so hard to understand? So he got it, and at the end he says it's not a good sushtal. He says because the reason why you're allowed to hit another person is based on the famous Rambam. The Rambam's lashon is the reason why you're not allowed to hit people. It's the Rambam says you're not allowed to hit person for when you're doing it. It's the Rambam writes that the reason why you're not allowed to hit people is because Lo Yosef is only when you're doing it for no reason. If you're doing it for a purpose, you have a reason for doing it. You're doing it to improve the person's life. Then it's not awesome. So he wants to say maybe it's not a good sushta. Okay, debatable. The shaila that the Eish Lavrov the Bechacha want to talk about is what about family? Let's say I send a letter to a family. Who in that family is allowed to read the letter? Mother, father, brother, sister, who's the extended family when it comes to this? So the Eish L'Avraham, the Bechach, and Sefer Das Ketoshim says, there's a Gemara B'Metzia. The Gemara says that if I ask you to watch something for me, I have to assume that you're not only going to watch it. You're going to ask your wife to watch it. You're going to ask your kids to watch it. Because that's what it means in a family. So he wants to say the same thing with a letter. When you send a letter to a family, you have to assume that everyone in the family is going to read the letter. So if I send a letter to the family, expect that dad's going to read it, mother's going to read it, everyone in the family is going to read it. So, Shevet HaGassi has a shayla, what about married kids? Do you have to expect that the married kids are going to come also and read the letters? You know, one thing is they send a letter to the house, the people live in the house. What about the married kids? So he says, well... Right. So today I think it's a little different because I think today it's being addressed to a specific person. If it says Mr. and Mrs., I don't see why the kids should be allowed to read that. I think if it's more of an open letter to a family, then you have to expect everyone in the family is going to read it. So he talks about what happens if parents want to read their adult children's emails. What about the other way around? So he wants to tie in, well, if they're not saimchen al shulchanai, which means if you have adult children that you're not supporting, then you're for sure not allowed to. If you have adult children that you are supporting, maybe, according to the Shevet HaGassi, maybe you'd be allowed to read their emails. Now again, stam, because you own it. It'll be part of yours. So that's if you can make up with them, say, listen, I'm giving to you, this is the rule, that I'm going to check your things. Again, I don't suggest that it's a good idea for married couples, but in any case, that's an interesting shayla in the poskim of how far does the extent of the issue go. What about phone tapping? Would there be any prohibition of listening to someone else's phone conversation? So if you look at over number 37, the Sefer Mishpatei HaTorah by Rabbi Spitz, he's a big dayan, he says, it's aser. Why is it any different than reading someone else's mail? It's the same idea. Listening to someone else's private things, fall into all the other assumptions that we mentioned. He says, however, I'm not mechuyev if I'm sitting in the street and two people are talking and they're very open about their conversation, that's their fault. No one told them to be open. But I'm not allowed to go and listen to someone else's phone conversation, that would be a prohibition. The Shevet HaKohasi has a big chiddush. He says, when we talk about discarded mail, that's not discarded in the garbage. Why? Because if I take a letter thrown in the garbage, I'm expecting no one to read it. Because who goes through garbage? So he says, today when we talk about the Ashba, it means a place where you don't expect anyone to actually read it. But if I throw a letter, to a place where, again, for example, if I leave a letter on a park bench, that's Zarkai. Park bench, people read things. But after he says, if you take a letter and you throw it into the garbage, you don't have to expect someone's going to go through the garbage and read it. So today, if you walk through someone's house and you go into his garbage and pull out a letter, that's not called Zarkai. Because that's not expected that you're going to read it. Zarka would be if you find it in shul, you find it on a park bench. Just to wrap up, there's a Gemara in Yuma, number 38. The Gemara says...
Sorry, just to clarify, somebody leaves their phone on the park bench, that doesn't give you permission to...
No, in that case, I would assume you'd look at it just to return it, just to be kind of mitzvah heishav. There's a Marzika Gemara in Yuma, number 38. The Gemara says in Yuma, "Minayin lo'im edov l'chaver yishu b'val yo'imer." How do you know if you say something to your friend that you're not allowed to say it to someone else? Hashem said to him, Lamar. So Rashi says, Lamar means loy omar. Don't say to other people. There's a Gemara that says, just people tell you things, keep it to yourself. Don't share with other people. Says the Chafetz Chaim in number 37, he said that this is actually brought down in Smag and in Magen Avraham. But he says, first of all, don't tell me, well, I can't share information that's going to harm someone. Because where's the source of this halacha? Moshe Rabbeinu and Hashem. I don't think Hashem was worried that Moshe Rabbeinu is going to say something that's going to harm Hashem's look to the people. So you see, says the Chafetz Chaim, this prohibition is, even if it's not going to, there's no mitzvah just to shmooze. However, says the Chafetz Chaim, that's only a midah toiva. Midah toiva, it's not really awesome. To share information that's not harmful is not awesome. But it's just not a good midah to go around sharing everything you've ever heard just to pass along the information. So those who want to tell you that this Gemara itself is a reason not to read other people's emails. Forget the Benegarishim, forget Lo Selech, forget the Hafta. There's no mitzvah to go around reading other people's things. Just with the nanny cam. So my wife wants to put in a nanny cam. She asked me if it's mutter. So first of all, if it's a goy, so Lecher, you're okay either way. Because according to many Achreinim, a goy, there's no problem. So they bring a raya from a Gemara Ba Metzia, which is I don't understand the raya. The Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan said, if you want to lose all your money, hire workers and don't watch them. So, you see, you're allowed to put in a nanny cam. I almost don't understand what the right is. That means that you should stand there and watch the babysitter in the house. Doesn't mean you're allowed to do things behind the back. So, Allah, I don't know exactly what's the status of a nanny cam.